This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Surprise! That's right. It's an afternoon Sports Saturday, and Allie Trost isn't here. Beards McFly isn't here. No, you're getting, you know what I'm going to say? You're getting the A-Team Sports Saturday. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Jason Justice, the Drake, on the other side of the glass. I don't know if there's a sports comparison. You talk about next man up all the time. I don't know at what point so many guys go down that eventually the starter comes back in, but that's the role that Jason is in this weekend. Where, like, Mitch Schwartz, if he was active tomorrow with his back just all jacked up, but then every single other offensive lineman in front of him suffered some horrible fate against the Broncos, then he would come back in. That's Jason's situation now. Nothing horrible has happened to Allie. She's just off today. So I'm here on this side of the mic. And I'll tell you what we're not going to do today. We're not going to do two straight just flaming hours of KU K-State. We'll do a little bit. We'll talk a little bit of it. Scott Chasen will join us here in about 45 minutes. We'll talk a bunch of NFL with Matt Verderam in a little while as well. He'll join us at 5:30. Scott will join us at 5. That'll all be great. But I don't want to put KU fans through any more than you already just got here on your home for Kansas, all things Kansas athletics, which is, something that we hold with confetti in our hands during basketball season and with tissues in our hands during football season, but you can hear all the KU games here on Sports Radio 10, of course, and today's just didn't go very well. The final score was 55-14, and it wasn't that close. an absolute dumpster fire that we'll go through. I believe Scott on Twitter gave his autopsy, in his words, of what happened to KU today. The special teams were not very special, and we'll talk about some of that with Scott in a little bit as well. Beyond that, we'll talk a lot of Chief stuff over the course of the day. But also, Jason, you just let me know, like, whenever you have done what you need to do to make the show, like, begin and be planned as necessary. But I feel like we had a conversation that was just sort of happening, and then the music started. And I just had, like, three things that I wanted to kind of kick back and forth, and I don't see any reason we can't just do that.
Sure, we can produce live.
While we're also going over the air.
We'll do it live.
There was another phrase before that I can never remember, that famous clip. We were basically just talking about morning radio and oversleeping and all of that. And, like, this morning I was at the Hy-Vee and Lee's Summit off Rice Road. They have got a great deal on wine and spirits. They're not sponsoring this show, but that's all true. We gave away some stuff there and everything. But for a long time, I don't know what, Jason, a year and a half or so, I was crack of dawn weekend morning button pusher here at 810.
Yeah, and you were passable too.
Totally. I would say, in the realm of C's to get degrees, I was getting C pluses to B minuses often. Not every time, but often. And the thing that I was going to, that's what we were talking about before the show started. And the thing within that I was going to mention is that basically every single, this is also why no one should ever, I don't know how Jake Gutierrez has his head on his shoulders, like, literally. Because no one should have to do, and same for Steven and Nate. But if Steven or Nate isn't, at their post right on time, things still go over the air, The button pushers in that moment, that is a stressful position to be in. And I just didn't sleep for the, because I was also, that was like the peak sort of college time for me, also doing those weekends. So I just didn't sleep for like 2 years.
Oh, yes. I didn't sleep in high school when I was doing radio. I did overnights and I went to school.
Yeah. And so for me, the issue was I sleep more/better doing like the night show than I ever did having to just run the morning board. Still not a lot or well, but more and better. But the thing for me is I just would not sleep well at all Friday or Saturday night because I was just too busy partying. No, because I had tremendous anxiety about getting up on time the next day. That's why no one should do this. No one should do that particular thing for very long. So I have tremendous respect for the morning show. among other things. But that's the one that we're talking about that's relevant right now. The thing that has been a real, just sort of stunningly efficient addition to my life, vis-a-vis making sure I'm at Hy-Vee at, you know, a respectable 8:30 for remote, the remote that starts at 9, instead of getting there at, you know, waking up in a panic at 8:45 and realizing I'm going to have to break several traffic laws to get there on time. The tremendous victory in my life has been the Apple Watch. And I know, Jason, that you have one. And I was wondering if you are a user of the Apple Watch alarm setting, at least whenever you need to be up that morning. Is this anything that you've...
No, I just use my phone. I don't wear my watch when I sleep because that's when you charge it.
Yeah, well, so sometimes I'll just charge it. It charges pretty fast if you just pretty much any time. I don't wear it every night because it's still sort of odd. I feel like I should take it off before I'm allowed to sleep. It feels like a work accessory, you know? But if I've got to be up the next day, you can set an alarm on your watch or it'll sync up to your phone one. And whenever the alarm goes off, everyone with an Apple Watch should hear this. Whenever your phone goes off, it starts vibrating like you're getting, you know, a notification, but it's just bzz, 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 bzz. It's totally silent, but it feels insane. Like it is such a bizarre sensation, especially jolting awake or whatever. It actually wakes me up in a way that I'm always afraid my phone alarm won't. I had one sports Sunday morning where my phone just like didn't charge overnight for whatever reason. Well, if you've got the alarm set on your watch, its battery is still all contained there.
Sure, yeah.
So because after one weekend, I bought like a backup alarm that also not with my phone, but just that straight up plugs in the wall. But what if there's a power outage and then that goes out? Like these are the things that go through my head at, you know, 11 p.m. the day before I have to be up at 6 to be somewhere on time. The Apple Watch has been a tremendous addition to my life in that way.
You know, it's interesting. I've been doing radio long enough that I've probably dealt with calls from half a dozen or more employers over the past 25, 30 years from people who said, all right, so this guy works for me, and he said he had his alarm clock set to listen to your radio station, and that you guys were off the air this morning when his alarm went off, so there was just silence. Is that true?
Really?
Yeah, and you know, about half the time, it was true.
It has been true before.
Yeah, because if you have an alarm clock that goes off to the radio, and, you know, it's some station I work for, 30 years
WXYZ
ago.
Topeka, yeah. Southwest, North Dakota. There's a Topeka, right. Southwest. What does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah, and they're off the air. It's dead air, you know, then you're not going to hear anything.
A soft crackle of static, perhaps?
Right. My wife was sleep something this morning, about 1:30 this morning, and turned on her clock radio on her bedside table and blamed me.
Why? Why did she think that was your fault? Did she think you were playing a cool prank or something?
She thought that. Well, I got home late. I was here late last night. She thought that I came in and turned on her radio.
I'm going to ask a question that I think is probably the question you asked her in the moment. But why would you do that?
Well, because she was partially unconscious, and you know, she had been talking in her sleep, and so you know, she was kind of in that halfway state there.
I was gonna say that I don't really know if I remember when I was little, occasionally, so like family members would tell me that I like talked in my sleep, and I think what finally happened is that I finally had enough platforms where I was talking when I was awake that I no longer needed to talk in my sleep. But I honestly don't know if that ever really. I know I snore now.
Yeah, my wife normally will speak complete sentences that don't always make a lot of sense, but this morning it was some sort of weird speaking in tongues. It sounded like language, but every word started with a K sound. It was very strange.
Interesting.
It was an odd thing, and things like this only happen on nights when, you know, I'm going to be very limited on the number of hours where I can sleep.
Sure.
My wife has an alarm clock issue. My 20-year-old son decides 1 a.m. is the time to do laundry. You know, these are the things.
I was doing laundry whenever you told me that this show was probably going to start about half an hour earlier than I was expecting for it to. But that's a normal time to do laundry, I think. It's just like midday Saturday.
Saturday's the day.
1 a.m., not great. Does Does your wife remember, like, her dreams and stuff whenever she wakes up?
Every once in connected? A while, she will. You know, she has a she tends to have the same dream all the time, where she has to move out of the dorms, or you know, her the stones in her ring keep falling out, or
right.
or she finds pins in her fingers a lot.
Oh, and,
you know,
that
weird,
one
weird,
sucks.
Weird dreams.
I have one distinct dream that I'm pretty sure I've talked about on the radio before. That I remember from probably being like 12 or 13, where I'm just there was some old like it was some like Jumpstart sixth grade or whatever sort of PC game, like just a CD-ROM, you know, put it in and it teaches you about words. I don't actually think it was Jumpstart. We did go through this several. Weeks ago on Almost Entirely Sports at some point. But the whole plot of it was like you're learning while also going through some like ancient pyramid or whatever, and it's haunted by a, you know, a mummy come to life or whatever. I played that. There's also some book that I vaguely remember that wasn't even like Goosebumps. I mean, it was like some sort of, you know, child academic book about mummies or whatever. And I had this nightmare where I'm running through what I instinctively know to be a pyramid for whatever reason. I never enter the pyramid in my dream, but I'm in a pyramid and I'm just running. And there are these pillars kind of just along where I'm running that have like pots on top of them that I can somehow reach because I think they're taller than me. It doesn't matter. It's a dream. And I'm knocking these pots behind me because I'm being chased by, of course, a mummy. And then I get to the end of the hallway and I turn around and I like know that it's coming, but it never actually breaks through like into my vision or whatever. And then I wake up. And so that is the only dream that I remember like vividly from any point in my life, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I'll remember dreams for a little bit, but they end up in the recycling folder really quickly. So also now, like, girlfriend Renee has bought a bunch of Halloween decorations and stuff, and we have a no mummies rule that started off as maybe a joke that is not actually a joke. Skeletons, ghouls, clowns, gravestones, spider webs, whatever. No mummies.
No mummies.
No mummies.
Okay.
I don't want to watch the. I've not seen the film The Mummy. There was that exhibit at Union Station many years ago where like they were like, "Ooh, come look at this actual mummy." I looked at it from afar. I need to find out when that was here because I can pinpoint how old I was then, which will correlate to exactly how sad it is that I was not going to it. Let's see. Union Station.
I've seen actual mummies in museums before. They're not that freaky.
Yeah, no, I know. And I think if I was there now, if I was in a mummy situation now, I'd probably be like, yeah, it's fine. I get it. But I also definitely don't need them decorating my home.
See, most of my super intense dreams as a child were about tornadoes, and I've always wanted to see a tornado in person. So I'm attracted towards what harassed me in my dreams as a child.
It's why you work in radio.
Absolutely.
You're attracted to the things that harass you. I can't find... I see that there was some mummy exhibit at Union Station in 2017. Yes, that was it. It was 2 years ago. I was nearly in tears. I was nearly in tears standing 40 feet away from a mummy. I could not come face to face with it. It doesn't really matter. Anyway, I just wanted to make sure everyone knew about the watch alarm thing because it really is—it's really made
shocks you awake.
It really shocks you awake, in a way that has made it easier to go to sleep because I'm more confident that I'm actually going to wake up whenever I need to wake up. Unlike those mummies,
KU special teams could have used that today.
They sure could have. They could have used it just a full-on shock collar. You will not trick me into accidentally talking about KU before I darn well intend to, which will happen here in about half an hour. I also, now we are actually producing on the air instead of just talking on the air. Do we need to take another break sometime hereabouts?
Yeah, now's a good time.
Now's a good time then. Let's take a break here on Sports Saturday. We'll come back and I've got very serious Chiefs takes and things to look forward to against the Broncos tomorrow. That game kicks off in the afternoon. We've obviously got pregame for you starting at the crack of dawn here on Sports Radio 810. Postgame with me will be immediately after. There are a couple of things that I think people have probably missed out on in what they have or haven't seen from the Broncos this year. Obviously, Drew Locke is a really interesting story. And there are a couple of major storylines from from the Chiefs. We're going to kind of see them prove something one way or another, or at least add another data point, because the last 2 weeks have looked so very different. What the Chiefs do this weekend, I think, is going to be indicative of what we can actually expect from two particular units, maybe three particular units if you want to expand it a little bit. We'll talk about that whenever we come back here on Sports Saturday. Welcome back into Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Josh Briscoe, Jason Justice, hitting all the buttons. We ended up talking about Apple Watches and mummies. The other option we had was talk about how good this new Glass Animals album is and how mad I was at all my friends for not telling me how great it was for like 2 months, only to then find out that like one of my friends who had listened to it thought it was awful, and that it's like there's a very split audience on the new Glass Animals album. I'm going to say that is sort of, we're going to eat our sports vegetables now, and if we get to the end of the hour and I still have been able to not talk about the new Glass Animals album, it's not even that new anymore. Again, it came out like 2 months ago. Then we can talk about it then, and then Jason, you can explain to me why you don't get it, and that's fun. It's okay. You've got like certifiable good music taste, but I also just want to talk about it because everyone that I've wanted to talk about it with has not liked it so far. So we'll get there when we get there. But tomorrow, obviously, is Chiefs Broncos. It's the first matchup against Denver this year. Obviously, the third AFC West matchup of the year. So the first time they're facing their first opponent in the division they haven't faced yet. I think I said that pretty clearly. But there are a few interesting things in this matchup, and some things that I didn't really fully know or think about until this week. And some things that I imagine a lot of people are in a similar boat on with the specifics of where the Broncos are at. One thing is obviously with Drew Lock, you know, he ended up missing a bunch of time, but he came back against the Patriots. And in this whole season for the Broncos is about figuring out what Drew Lock is. And I don't want to... I hesitate to even like phrase it that way or kind of regret phrasing it exactly that way, because I don't think the Broncos have to have a final verdict on Drew Lock at the end of this season. I don't think you should ever really have a final verdict about any young quarterback until you have a significant amount of information, because it's a moving, evolving process. The Jets might be done with Sam Darnold after this, but also if you said, hey, Sam Darnold has had a revolving door of bad coaches, maybe somebody else should give him a shot. Like Josh Rosen is on the practice squad for the Bucs. I think he's with the Bucs right now. He's gotten moved around so much that you know, that says something about Josh Rosen. But also if you said, hey, Andy Reid would like to work with Josh Rosen, do you think he'll be able to trade him for a second-round pick after a round of preseason games in 2 years? Yeah, I think that would probably work. Situations are really, really important for quarterbacks. You see it happen in the best possible sense with Mahomes, where I think he would have been really good anywhere, but I think he's being genuinely maximized in this offense with these weapons. You're seeing a guy like Deshaun Watson in Houston work through a lot of sort of self-defeating circumstances, I think you could argue, with what Bill O'Brien was doing, and now he's going to end up with a new head coach and a new offense next year, but this year it's all Romeo Crennel, and that offense isn't really going to change much, I imagine, but they trade away his best weapon, et cetera, et cetera. But also, we can all see Deshaun Watson's an excellent quarterback. This year for the Broncos, you know, they ended last season with Locke, and they won every game that he started except for that game against the Chiefs. So, a nice start. But now you're getting a full season where he had the whole offseason as the absolute definite, no-doubt starter. And now you're hoping to get 16 games. It's going to be less with the injuries that he missed, obviously. But this entire process for them needs to be... They need to know significantly more one way or another about him by the end of the year. Because if he just bombs 2020, which I don't think he's going to bomb, I think what we do know about him right now is actually very interesting, but more on that in a second. But if he goes through this year and, you know, he's a tick better than Nathan Peterman. He's a turnover machine. He's still very conservative, but he's turning the ball over, all of those issues. You can see a world where the Broncos are dragging him along and they're talking about quarterbacks again at the beginning of sort of NFL draft season. If he's great, then you just want to keep giving him weapons and improving his offensive line and you know, I mean, like, Jerry Jeudy is there and has been good so far. He hasn't had, like, these remarkable big games, but he's been really consistent, which is a nice place to start for a rookie. You want to keep adding weapons. You know, like, Noah Fant is good. His backfield is fine. I'm not too stressed about that one way or another. Tim Patrick has ended up with, like, the biggest game of the year from them. If you don't know who Tim Patrick is, it's fine. Most people don't. But another receiver in that room. You build around him and you say, all right, he's going to be the guy that we use to try to bring down Patrick Mahomes for the next 5 or 10 years or whatever. Those are the extremes where those next moves are pretty easy usually. All the stuff in the middle between those two data points, that's where decisions get made and franchises turn and things get really messy. Think about how long the Dolphins had Ryan Tannehill. I think Ryan Tannehill was probably the poster boy for, is he good, is he not, let's give him another year. He did that for a long time in Miami, and then they finally said, all right, we're moving on. And then he had he's been outstanding in Tennessee, where he was brought in to just sort of compete with Marcus Mariota. Explain that to me. I'm still not sure I know how that all happened. Conversely, you have, you know, the Raiders have been trying to make it work with Derek Carr for what feels like a lifetime at this point. But you bring in Marcus Mariota to back him up, and maybe if things don't work, you go that way. Derek Carr has been pretty good this year. He had a great game against the Chiefs. Is that going to challenge the Chiefs long term? No, of course not. The Chargers are in a similar place with Herbert. They didn't expect to be yet, and you shouldn't pass judgment on 1 year. And the Broncos are going to have just over 1 year with Locke, kind of, you know, as an evaluation tool. But you at least need to know where the arrow is pointing. You get in trouble whenever you find yourself in quarterback purgatory, which is what Derek Carr can be. It's what, at some point, it's what Philip Rivers became. That it certainly wasn't the whole time for him in San Diego, then L.A., but maybe even just through the L.A. times, got a little bit of Philip Rivers quarterback purgatory. And so the Broncos need to avoid that. In some ways, that feels worse than just sort of rotating through a bunch of failed experiments with Trevor Siemian and the like. That list is actually, like, incredibly long of guys that just between Peyton Manning to now. So, for the Broncos, figuring out what Drew Locke is going to be tremendously important to what their long-term strategy is. He's now been in, I don't think he started, yeah, he started 8 games now. Obviously, he left really early in week 2. But one thing that I think is a bit under-discussed on Locke at this point is, like, going 4-1 to end 2020 or 2019. That looks great. Felt like he had some command of the offense and everything. That's all wonderful. He passed for 208 yards against the Chiefs. That was the second highest output of his 2019. He hit 216 against the Titans in week 1. Passing yards are a bad way of measuring if a quarterback is good or not. I'm not trying to use that to pass judgment on Drew Locke. But some of the stats in there are like, they don't quite compute with how we've talked about him, if that makes sense. He had a legitimately excellent game against the Texans last year. 22 for 27, 309 yards. I don't actually have the touchdown number. I think it was two touchdowns and a pick off the top of my head. But then with his 2 games this year, like first against the Titans and then against the Patriots, like against the Patriots last week, they won that game and he was 10 of 24 for 189 yards. And it's not because he was absolutely chucking the ball in all these games. He actually was looking downfield quite a bit against the Patriots, which I do give him some credit and some leeway for. They were not getting completed, obviously, but he was actually, his intended air yards were very the highest of his career so far in week one and week five. But they haven't been landing, and if the downfield accuracy doesn't end up being there for Locke, then they're going to have to retool what they expect him to do in that offense. And if he becomes a short yardage machine, you start asking what he actually is as a quarterback. Anyway, I just said that I don't think you should totally pass judgment on a young quarterback after one season, much less after really like seven full games. I'm not saying that what he does against the Chiefs tomorrow directly indicates what he's going to be. But in the AFC West, Justin Herbert had an excellent game against the Chiefs in a game they barely lost. Derek Carr had a great game against the Chiefs in a game that the Raiders won. Now Locke is getting his first swing whenever, I don't know if we've seen two AFC West quarterback performances that good against Patrick Mahomes' Chiefs ever. Seeing if Drew Locke can make it three in a row will be really, really interesting. I'm also really excited to see how Steve Spagnuolo attacks him, because there was an amount of sort of respect in terms of pass rush, but disrespect in terms of coverage for Derek Carr. They went after Josh Allen. Nate Taylor of The Athletic said last week they treated Josh Allen like they treated Joe Flacco. And that was true. Like, that was sort of the strategy. I think we'll probably see some of that for Drew Locke as well, because I don't think they expect him to be able to go over the top very consistently. We will take a break here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810. Scott Chasen at 5, Matt Verderam at 5:30. I'm Joshua Briscoe. More of me whenever we come back. Still Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe, Jason Justice, the Drake, on the other side of the glass. We'll keep talking Chiefs here in a little bit. A little bit of KU, K-State here coming up with Scott Chasen in about 10 minutes as well. But Jason wanted to extend a PSA really quick on an Amber Alert currently in the area.
Yeah, so your phone may have gone off with this. Maybe not, but it's kind of a messy Amber Alert in the Leavenworth area. It's a mess. You can go read about it. But we've got a big signal wherever this guy is. He's probably still within our signal range. So be on the lookout for a black 2008 Honda Accord with the Kansas license 266 MXB. That's a black 2008 Honda Accord with the Kansas license plate 266 MXB. If you see it, call 911. You can read about the story. It is not pretty, but you can help if you see that car.
Yeah, and like Jason said, there's a bunch of stories up from a lot of the local news networks just sort of covering a few of the details that we know at this point and a lot of stuff that we still don't know. But yeah, license plate 266 MXB, black Honda Accord. If you see that, Jason said, call 911 and see if you can help out that way. So the segue now to sports.
No easy way to do it.
Nope.
But you did.
Sports. Nope. Segue out of what? The last thing we talked about, poof air. It's just in the past now. Like I said, we'll save the KU talk for Scott here. One other thing, though, kind of looking ahead to Chiefs-Broncos a little bit. I mentioned Drew Locke and all of the sort of questions that I think the Broncos are hoping to answer just over the course of this year. Again, this game is not by any means final word on Drew Locke at all, but it was a really good opportunity for the other two quarterbacks the Chiefs have faced so far from the AFC West. So seeing if it can be one for Drew Locke will be interesting. Seeing how the Chiefs defense reacts to him and tries to bother him tomorrow, I think is going to be really interesting. Like I said, Spags really brought a lot on Josh Allen, and frankly, the pass rush, at least just across the defensive line, was by no means great against Buffalo. It was, I think that they had their worst game with both Frank Clark and Chris Jones against the Raiders 2 weeks ago. It certainly wasn't that against the Bills, but also Spags was trying to facilitate some extra pressure with some interesting blitzes and all that. I expect to see some of that against Locke tomorrow as well. But seeing if that pass rush, also by the way, Chris Jones probably going to play a lot of defensive end, I would imagine, because Mike Dana is out and has been out for a while. Alex Okafor is out for this game. Taco Charlton is also out for this game. So, I mean, we're looking at Frank Clark, Tano Passanio, Chris Jones for the most part. rotating through those in spots, and that's moving Chris Jones back out to I was going to say a 4-3 end, but I mean, they're never really in a base package. So putting him back out on the end will obviously be really interesting. But, you know, the Chiefs secondary was outstanding through the first 4 or 5 weeks of the year. I guess 4 weeks. By any metric, by points allowed, in large part, in even, you know, they gave up a bunch of yards, but by a lot of advanced metrics, I mean, across the board, it was a really excellent performance, and that was with L'Jarius Sneed, who we had no particular information on coming into the year, other than that Spag said he was still trying to get up to NFL speed on a bunch of things. And then, you know, he gets hurt, and Tre'Davious Ward breaks his hand, and Bashaud Breeland is suspended. I mean, they have not had their secondary at full strength, even back at safety. One Thornhill is coming back from an ACL tear, and I think he's probably really close, if not at fully 100% at this point, but he's got to get acclimated. Breeland has mentioned that he's still kind of knocking the rust off a little bit. With all of that happening, I don't think that we've seen the Chiefs secondary at its healthiest or best or fullest yet, but in large part, the Chiefs' strategy defensively was, we are going to spend all of the money on that defensive line. We're going to pay Frank Clark, we're going to pay Chris Jones, and we're going to generate pressure, and as often as possible, do it with four. And by doing that, we're going to buy our defensive backs. We're going to buy them some time by not making them have to hold on for as long. And that logic makes a ton of sense. Like that, if you can pull it off. The issue is that secondary play is erratic, but pass rush is expensive, and typically a successful secondary is more indicative of an overall successful defense than a successful pass rush is, just generally speaking. There's a bunch of interesting research that's been done on the specifics there. But, you know, the rush never got home against Derek Carr, and he had time to take deep shots, ended up slicing up this defense. Against the Bills, they brought their pressure. They created pressure in unique ways, and an offense way better equipped for deep shots with a quarterback that enjoys deep shots in Josh Allen. None of that ever landed. And so seeing how all of that moves together is going to be really, really interesting tomorrow, because you can do a little chicken or the egg. I think the Chiefs at this point have bet on their pass rush being the thing that makes their entire defense better because it's so dominant. But it hasn't been that level of dominant in a little bit yet. So seeing if that ends up turning around. And also, you know, Chris Jones has still been kind of working back from his groin injury that popped up. So don't know his full status just in terms of exactly how healthy or unhealthy he is. But those things are all so intertwined that evaluating them really demands that you evaluate all of them. The only other spot defensively that we haven't touched on yet is that linebacker core, which has been, I think, quietly pretty good this year. The role for Anthony Hitchens seems to have simplified maybe a little bit. This is, you know, outside observer, naked eye and all that. But it seems like either by him becoming more comfortable in the defense or by the defense asking him to do a little bit less, it seems like Anthony Hitchens is playing at full speed again, if that makes sense. Something that, you know, you obviously want to see all the time. But between him and Damian Wilson, and we've even seen a little more from Willie Gay, it seems like those pieces are gelling a little bit more. Still could, generally speaking, use a little less Ben Neiman in my life. But whenever you're running a defense that demands that every single part is exactly where you ask it to be, I understand why Spag says, no, we're going to keep playing Ben Neiman over Willie Gay or Damian Wilson over Willie Gay right now, because I need more than anything else for him to know where he's supposed to be. The thing is, Willie Gay might be able to do a little more, even being a little bit out of position at times because of his incredible athleticism. But that's the trade-off there. So the defense is I don't know if it's the most important part of this game tomorrow, but it's one of the things that I think we're going to be able to learn quite a bit about. And also, as a regular opponent to Drew Locke, maybe learn a little bit about him as well and what exactly his his strategy ends up being. Well, again, we learned about Herbert and Derek Carr also in their matchups against the Chiefs. Seeing what Drew Locke's able to do will be interesting as well. We don't have time at this very moment to talk about the Chiefs' offensive line, but we're going to have the same. Basically, what Andy Reid said this week is what they ended the game with last week is what we'll see tomorrow. So it's going to be Fisher and Rimmers on the tackles, Wiley and Allegretti at the guards, and Daniel Kilgore at center. It looked great against Buffalo. The Broncos also have a substantially better front four than the Bills do, even without Von Miller. So seeing how all that works together is going to be really, really interesting. I'll be keeping an eye on that as well. We'll talk about that over the next hour, but next we'll talk about KU and K-State with Scott Chase, and that's next here on Sports Radio 810.